First I was a Catholic girl, loved the mass, I watched the swirl of smoke from candles burning, while Mary looked up yawning.
Hello and welcome to the Digital Freethought Radio Hour on WOZO Radio 103.9 LPFM right here in Knoxville, Tennessee. We're recording this on Sunday morning, March 20th, 2022. I'm Larry Rhodes, or Doubter 5. And as usual, we have a co-host, Wombat, on the line with us. Hello, Wombat.
I forgot to brush my eyebrows, and now I feel so naked.
Okay, yeah, they're disgraceful.
Yeah.
Let's see, our guests today are George Brown, the 2.5, formerly of Brooklyn, now of East Tennessee. Hello. And the John Richards from across the pond in England. Hello, John, welcome.
Hello.
Digital Free Thought Radio Hour is a talk radio show about atheism, free thought, rational thought, humanism, and the sciences. And conversely, we'll also talk about religions, religious faith, gods, holy books, and superstition. And if you get the feeling that you're the only non-believer in your town, well, you're just not. In Knoxville, a town in the Bible Belt, Tennessee, we have a group of over 1,000 of us, just our town. And we'll tell you after the mid-show break how you can learn more about us and maybe start a group in your town. Wombat, what's our topic today?
Today we're talking about nobody likes a dictator. And more important news, this week I got my first gray nose hair. And I don't know how to feel about that. I feel...
Did you bake a cake or something?
I don't know. I couldn't pick it out. It's just like, how do I target just that one? What's going on? You try to take care of so many other things in your life and you don't realize time passing. John, do you remember what you do on your first gray nose hair? What did you do? What sort of celebration did you have?
This is a bit personal. I've got a little electric mower that you stick up your nostril and it does away with all.
Okay. I'm going to keep that in mind.
Yeah. TMI.
John, how have you been since last week? I'll go on and check in with you before we jump to the topic.
Yeah, I've been fine. Thank you over here. We've got lovely spring weather.
Wonderful.
I've been driving and making a video. I've got a gadget now. I can stick my phone on the dashboard and make videos of me driving. It's fun.
Okay. And no one freaks out that you're on the wrong side of the car?
I'm on the right side of the car.
Put it on YouTube. I see.
Listen, we've got a reason for driving on the left. You don't have a reason for driving on the right. Do you want to know more?
One of the problems with driving on the right is when you get out of the driver's seat, you're in traffic.
That's true, too.
I thought that was crazy.
Yeah, that's also not good. Yeah, I can see that. Larry, how have you been since last week, my friend?
Oh, doing well. I'm playing a lot more of Skyrim and enjoying my VR. I mean, that's great. Really looking forward to the warm weather. The dogwoods out front, their little buds have started cracking open. So it wouldn't be much longer. They'll be in bloom. So very
fantastic.
Cool.
Yeah. And, right now it looks beautiful outside. So once it gets warmer, too, I think it's going to be really, really nice early spring. George Brown, always good to see you. How have you been, my friend?
I've been really good because the Lord has answered my prayers.
Yes.
The Laird.
Yes. All this business about turning all the clocks forward and backward and forward and backward and forward and backward. I hate it. 50 years ago, I was announcing on the radio, spring ahead, fall back. I finally got it straight in my own head for making those announcements. We are freed from the tyranny of this insane tradition.
Not yet. But the United light States is finally Senate, on.
The United States Senate. Well, who the hell in the Congress is going to oppose this damn thing?
We'll see. It's going to the House now, though. We'll see.
So
you're getting a little
the Lord works in mysterious ways, and the Lord has answered my prayers. Hallelujah.
So I can tell you this right now. When I heard the news, I got in a text message from a buddy because we had been complaining about that since the last 4 years of just like, why are we doing this? Because Tennessee, for example, is a very long state, multiple time zones. So when we all have to stick to one time zone, it really means that there's a sweet spot for time throughout the year. and then it's over and you're no longer in that sweet spot. But if you change the daylight savings time, you're always stuck in a terrible time slot, because right when it starts to get a little sunny after work, you lose that hour. And you're like, this is terrible. Get rid of this. The people in Knoxville don't complain as much, but the people in like Chattanooga, Memphis, they're just like, Nashville. This is insane. It crazy. So I'm so glad they're getting rid of it. But
hopefully,
it's not over yet. But listen, this is the first time in my life that I've noted of a, I used to know how laws worked in America. I thought it goes to bill, the House, and then the Senate. I've never heard of Senate passing something first unanimously and then it's sending to the House. So like, if anything, that has to be like a proof of endorsement right there. Like that's just as for everything that's going on in the world right now, you know, with COVID, with Putin, with Ukraine, we all agree that daylight savings time sucks. And we all came together
praise
to agree
the Lord.
And there's your Christmas miracle.
No, there's a war on Christmas. Don't forget that.
Sure. Let's not forget. But also not forgetting that I don't think any of us like dictators. And why am I even bringing that up? Well, we are currently and have been affected by a number of dictators in the history of time. But most recently, I think the effects of Vladimir Putin and his effects on Ukraine and the other neighboring countries in that area who are looking with great caution on this like progression of war and the messages that he's sending and the complete gaslighting of his people. I just and arresting of dissidents. I just find it to be, you know, both scary and a situation where I look at the qualities of Vladimir Putin. If I wrote him down on a list of paper and I said, this is the attributes of a dictator. And now I look at the attributes of like what the Christian God, how he represents himself in his own book. There is a lot of commonalities there. In fact, I would almost say that the Christian God behaves very much like a dictator, and dictators emulate that at their best to control society. Go on ahead, George. What do you think?
Not only a dictator, but a narcissist dictator.
Yes, absolutely. I wonder if you could be one without the other, but like, yeah, I feel like.
Seems like they're always together.
But definitely, we definitely see how there could definitely be narcissists without them being dictators, but they're almost every dictator is a narcissist, right? Well, yeah.
Right.
But I'll throw this out too. There are a lot of Christians in Russia. There are a lot of Orthodox Christianity in Russia. It's the prevailing state religion. It's almost no room for anything else. And for the ardents, the complete supporters, the sycophants of Vladimir Putin, I find that there is no cognitive dissonance for someone who absolutely believes in the Christian God and supports Vladimir Putin, because it's a very consistent way of thinking where this guy's in charge, I'll believe whatever he tells me and I'll hate whatever that guy tells me to hate. And that's the way I'm moving forward in life. But in America, and I'm sure also in Russia too, there's people who are Christians who hate Vladimir Putin or hate his philosophy or hate his way of behaving, yet believe and support everything that the Christian God does as behavior, as actions, as testament, as laws that he puts down. And I can't imagine why there's this sudden level of dissonance.
Such a thin line between their two actions. Yeah.
And so I wanted to throw out some questions to you guys. Like, why do we as human beings, why are we so willing to question what's going on in Russia, but not question like our deeply held beliefs at the same time too, even when we can agree that we don't like dictators? What's going on there? Larry, would you mind shedding some light on that?
Well, when I was a Christian, I was raised Christian I was born in 1950, but I didn't know there was an option not to believe. I mean, everybody I knew from my parents to the postman, to the mayor, to the president of the United States were all, you know, believing Christians. And they said as much in their speeches, and anything that they happened to say or utter, they always seemed to end with God bless us or something. But anyway, and anybody who didn't, I never heard from, you know, they were shushed. They were quieted. It wasn't until I was in college, really, until I heard anything from atheists or even met any. So it wasn't really an option. So I figure that a lot of people are in that spot right now.
You know, it's absolutely true. Like sometimes if you don't even know that you could be it, it's not even in your realm of possibility, right? Man, it's so true. It's so true. Hey, what's up, George? What's up?
Well, it reminds me of this. I don't know if I mentioned this earlier here, but you know, I'm also located deep within the Bible Belt, and I was walking in the supermarket a few weeks ago, and a man, I passed an older man, and he said to me, we smiled at each other, and he said to me, "What church do you attend?" And I said, "I don't." He said, "Why not?" I said, "Because I'm an atheist."
Yeah, he got mad. Right?
I don't believe in God.
Yeah.
Well, but the fact that he automatically assumed that I was a Christian offended me, you know?
Right. And you know what? I feel like he sounded almost as if he was offended because now he has to have a worldview where not everybody he knows is Christian. And now he can't just always assume that to everyone that he meets.
Right.
And he took that out on you now by just with his like extreme privilege sense of expectations. It's just very bizarre.
Yeah.
John Richards, I want to throw this out at you. Do you have any inkling suspicions on why people aren't questioning their supernatural beliefs in a dictator like all supernatural being when they can easily agree that what Putin's doing to Russia as well as to Ukraine is just despicably evil?
Well, I'm not sure that I agree entirely with your premise that we all dislike dictators.
Okay.
Because a lot of people actually like strong leadership. And in order to get strong leadership, you have to have somebody who is dogmatic, certain that they're right. And in the case of Russia, it's a very difficult country to govern because it starts at Europe and it goes all the way across Asia. Mm. And if the islands hadn't been submerged, it would bump into America. What are they called? The Aleutians, is it up there?
Yeah, the land bridge across existed a long time ago.
Exactly, yes. And so I don't know how many time zones, we're talking about daylight saving, you know, there is in Russia, but it's a lot.
Mm.
And in order to govern a country like that, you've got to be a bastard, basically. You've got to be...
At least strong.
Yes, you've got to be a lord, a baron who is feared. Otherwise, because you can't possibly exert your influence across all that width of land. So you have to have a reputation, which is frightening. And that's what Putin has managed to get himself. So let's...
So some couple things there. Yes, landmass is expansive, and I don't disagree with that. However, if we talk about GDP or the amount of money that Russia generates, it's on equivalency of Spain, and Spain is handling itself quite well. If you talk about the population of Russia, I think it's about 150 million. There's 350 million people in America, and we ran through it's a quasi-democracy. Obviously, it's a republic, but... It is, and it also has a very complicated past in history, but we're not bombings. We're not going, it's a weird quandary with America because we have very, very different heads who have very different policies, but it is a system that is not as bastardized, I would say, if I can say, as the Russian dictatorship of I'm just one guy and I'm going to be leading this whole thing. It's like, no, there are other options. We can give turns. Everything can work. What do you think? John, what do you think? Throw it in.
Well, you nearly were under the influence of a dictator who pretty much rejected the last election. And had he been successful, he would now be governing.
So in my head, I see that as a situation where democracy almost died, but democracy won. Yeah. And so, it's definitely not a perfect system. It's a fragile system. Democracy is very fragile. Yeah. Yeah. But it was a system where it's what got that last guy out. And in in my head, that's a system that works rather than one that, you know.
Well, it worked. It worked on that occasion. It may not work next time when he tries to come back in 2024.
Yeah, and it worked to get him in the first place. I mean,
yeah, that's it's a worrisome situation. Yeah. It's not even Trump, to be honest with you. And this is a bit of a tangent. Trump is an idiot. And I think most people can most people would not have a problem assuming that he's not a very well-educated man. I'm worried about the next clever Republican, the next very eloquent and like seemingly
if we got a Putin evil. Here or something.
Well, something like that. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Well, the thing is, you see, that your electorate, it was George Carling, wasn't it, who said, think about how stupid the average man is. And then realize that 50% of us are more stupid than that. And so your electorate, and I'm not really targeting America here, it's Western democracy. They're all idiots. And so they want to elect somebody who's like them.
Right.
And that's why, and they also want strong leadership. They admire strength. So that's why they followed the Trump trail.
You have a very interesting point, because we both like smart, strong leaders, but don't want to feel weak or dumb at the same time too. And right. So we often elect leaders who find the value of less competition and instill things like anti-intellectualism and the concentration of power to like single bodies that they can control themselves. And so like, when you look at America, even it's not a, everybody has equal power. It's very much, we order people and hire electing bodies to vote for people. Essentially, that's
our, we're not a true democracy. We're right. Representative government.
And there's only three houses of power. Republic. And there's only like 1% of this country that has most of the wealth that you have to worry about. And therefore that, after that, it distills down into information and propaganda and marketing.
Yeah.
It's unfortunate. It's not perfect.
But, yeah. George has had his hand up for a while. We might want
to
recognize him.
George, what's up? Do you remember what you were going to say?
You're on mute. You're on mute, George.
Still on mute.
Thank you. There were two things I wanted to mention. One is that, in particular, the Russians are conditioned for a dictatorship. They have had continuous dictatorship, for as long as I can remember. In other words, if we go back to the days of Tsarist Russia, we have the Tsar, the king, or the emperor, as they were called, I think. And then communism came in, overthrew the royalty, but it was the same thing. It was one dictator after another under the communist economic system, and now Putin is a continuation of that. So it's just an unending line of dictatorships that these people have been subjected to, with, I might add, with the exception of the communist period, the support of the church. And
good point.
You know, the divine right of emperors or god, czars or whatever. Right. The next thing I wanted to mention, my topic number two, is that there have been a movement in the United States, which I didn't discover until I moved to go to school in Eastern Connecticut, which is not like New York City. And I started seeing right-wing extremists quoting a slogan that went, America is a republic, not a democracy. Let's keep it that way. And I still could never figure out what the devil they were talking about. But these are people who do not want their democracy.
It's weird, isn't it? Yeah. Well, there is no perfect democracy, not that I'm aware of.
Well, we got things wrong. You see, the first people to deploy a technology or a political system, let's say, get some things wrong. They get it out there into the world, but they don't get all the details right. So we made some mistakes with our democracy that other people in other parts of the world were able to reflect upon and get better when they persisted. But you know, let's in the sense of the technology illumination of this, you know, the British invented railroad trains and they got a lot of things right. But one of the things they didn't get right for themselves was the width of the trains, the width of the cars. So the Europeans did a better, you know, the continental people did a better job. They made their trains wider.
Right.
But Britain is stuck with the system that they innovated because the clearances won't permit European continental railroad cars to pass the station platforms and the tunnel walls. And, you know,
another
we are
example
stuck
of that,
with our imperfect democracy.
Just because you did it first doesn't mean it's perfect. And I think there's a
lot of right, exactly.
Italians made pizza, but America was the one who invented the crust first, right? But, George, I think you hit a solid point. Russia's conditioned for that sort of leadership, but they don't have to be conditioned for it. And that doesn't make it the best form of leadership. Not only that, but we can obviously see consequences when that kind of leadership becomes corrupt or warmongering, or like you said, you could have a narcissist dictator, but you could also just have someone who is dictating, but in a way that's aware of the consequences of their actions and not so much driven towards war. And I feel like just as we can be conditioned for dictatorship of a violent nature, we can be conditioned for critical thinking and higher forms of diplomacy. And why not strive for that higher standard as we become more of a global society? And then you're right, John, America has a lot of problems. And and trust me, as a Black man, I'm aware of a great deal of them. And towards the perspective of why aren't we looking at ourselves when we criticize other places? I think there has been a good number of examples of, you know, dissidents and protesting and struggles to try to curb the direction of America towards where it should be by like all parties here in the US. But it's an ongoing thing. And I think at the root of it comes being able to speak up about it and being able to have conversations with the people. And what we're seeing in Russia is even if you hold up a blank white piece of paper, you get arrested for it, you know?
Yeah,
And it's actually really scary because that is at least a privilege that we have here in the United States that we can look at Russia and be like, ooh, that is very different compared to what we can do here. That at least needs to fix. When you're arresting people who have a different opinion, that is very, very harmful.
Freedom of speech is so important.
Absolutely is.
Yeah. And so I wanted to mention that you say at the root of the thing here is one thing, but I think the root of the problem here of the problem is getting a good system of democracy. And the root of it is getting educated. Because if people are not educated about how their government system works,
right,
they're not going to be able to make informed decisions about who to elect.
You know, I would also say it's two-pronged. One, education, and two, participation, because you can learn as much as you want about the government. But if you aren't voting, if you aren't participating, if you aren't showing up, you know, you're hurting a system when you aren't a part of it, essentially.
Yeah. And
democracy really needs that many hands.
And it's pretty certain that people want to elect somebody like themselves.
Right.
They don't want to be talked down to by some toff, and they don't want to be they don't want to have somebody that they don't respect. So they want somebody on a level. So really we need to move the level up so that everybody.
Everyone was a little smarter than maybe average smart.
And we need population-wide education for that, free education, especially higher education.
Exactly.
Accomplish that.
To give you an example, there's a guy currently, he's in the primaries for the Republican candidacy in Georgia for the Senate. Okay. And he's just been interviewed, saying, let me see if I get his words right. If humans came from apes, science says that humans came from apes, and yet why are there still apes?
Yeah, it's terrible.
It's a bad argument still.
The thing is, he's got the freedom of speech to say that, which is good, because it means that everybody else can mock him for being so ignorant. He's a former NFL star.
I wanted to follow on that same trend that you're going on, John, where you're looking at what the foundational problem is too. Mm. And I find like it's going to be a multifaceted approach to resolving it. But yes, we should get more educated. But I also think that we can learn a lot from not always valuing the underdog in a story, because it tends to be the case that if someone's qualified for a position or someone did work harder or has more invested time in a particular thing,
yes,
that person should win, almost deservingly so. And it's not so much so, like if you had a guy who has 4 law school degrees from Harvard and a farmer, and they're both running for like a mayor or a governance position, and like the law school guy's like, listen, I know finances, I know economy, I've studied all these things. And the farmer's like, listen, I'm just a good, well, salt of the earth kind of nature guy. I got my suspenders here and I just trust the people. And I was just like, no, don't vote for the farmer. Farmer tends to win 50% of the time. And it's just like, that shouldn't be the case. We should be hiring people who strive to represent us in the best capacity possible.
Right.
I would say like more Obamas than the Trumps in my head.
In fact, being a candidate for an election, and I've been one, and I won 3 elections, but really there's no selection procedure. You know, if you apply for a job, there's a list of criteria that qualifications right. that you should have,
right.
you know,
yeah.
and experiences that you should have, but the only qualification for being a candidate is me.
It's a very good point. We're getting close to the bottom of the half hour, man. I really want to hang on this topic for a little bit more, but yeah, qualifications sure. would be really interesting to get back into. Larry, would you like to take us out and then we jump right back into it?
Stay tuned right here for the second half of the Digital Free Thought Radio Hour on WOZO Radio, 103.9 LPFM here in Knoxville, Tennessee. And we'll be right back after this short break. To the second half of the Digital Free Thought Radio Hour. I'm Doubter 5, and we're on WOZO Radio 103.9 LPFM right here in Knoxville, Tennessee. I'll get it out. Let's talk about the Atheist Society of Knoxville. ASK was founded in 2002. We're in our 20th year now. ASK has over 1,000 members, and we have weekly in-person meetings in Knoxville's Old City at Barley's Tap Room and Pizzeria. That's every Tuesday evening around 5:30 to 8. Look for us inside at the high top tables or outside on the deck, depending on the weather. We're usually the loudest and happiest group there. We also have Tuesday night Zoom meetings, so if you don't like to get out or don't live in Knoxville, you can still join us. You'll have to get our Zoom link, though, by emailing us at askanatheist@knoxvilleatheist.org
or letschatse@gmail.com. You can find ASK on Facebook, meetup.com, or go to their website at knoxvilleatheist.org. You can just Google Knoxville Atheist. It'll take you there. By the way, if you don't live in Knoxville, you could still go to Meetup and do a search for an atheist group in your town. Don't find one. Start one. That's right. Wombat, where do we want to pick up?
John pioneered us to a very interesting topic that I want to revisit, and it's the idea of what are the qualifications, right? And like, how do you be a qualified God? How do you be a qualified dictator? I just want to summarize the first half of the show. We were talking about nobody likes a dictator, covered a lot of interesting concepts. I think one of the things that tripped me up was I was so interested in talking about what Russia's doing poorly as a governing body that I failed to even recognize that what America's is lacking. And I think that is just an example of how people can look at Putin, but still value their God because they don't assess them all on the same scale. And I think through the conversation we had just like 15 minutes ago, I realized that, you know, America has a lot of things it can work on, but one of the things that it's doing better than Russia is the ability to speak freely and which Russia is cracking down on. And I think if more people were to speak freely, things like what Larry was saying, like, I didn't even know atheism was an option, would be more prominent because people who don't have the most popular state-held belief would be free to speak up without sudden hostility like George was facing when someone asked him, what church you go to? And he's like, I don't go to a church. Like, why not? Like, you don't have to face stuff like that when it's more common and well understood that there are people with different opinions. And even if they aren't the same that you hold, that they're still valuable. What I also wanted to talk about was freedom of speech being so valuable, and those who step down it, like Putin, you can also see it from the church because that's called blasphemy. And it's like, hey, what's blasphemy? It's like, you're not allowed to talk about God in this way. It's like, why? Am I offending God when I say that? Like, right. Is that really what we're trying to protect here? What value is this law of blasphemy at the end of the day, other than stamping out speech? And I see if we can agree that freedom of speech is useful, then why are we supporting a God that holds blasphemy as a tenet? We should at least look at that and say, that's a red flag. And that God is no longer qualified to be a God. And so if you were to ask me, what are the qualifications to be a God or a dictator? I would at least say, hey, you got to have free speech. You can have rules. You can stick to them. I don't care. But you could be a nice dictator at least and let your people speak freely. John Richards, what do you think? What are qualifications to be a dictator / God?
Dream on.
What would you say?
Dream on.
Dream on.
Yeah, okay. You can't be a dictator and allow free speech. Is that what you're saying, John?
I feel like you could. You just wouldn't be one for a very long time. Or maybe you can have one where you instill different kinds of principles other than just follow me in fear. There might be other ways of doing it. Yeah, but I think a benign
dictator.
Yeah.
Will probably be the best form of government, but I think it only exists in fairy tales.
No, here's my thought. Here's my thought of a dispassionate, separate dictator. Larry, don't roll your eyes at me. But if we were to take, I don't believe in any gods, but if we were to say the laws of physics are very much a dictation of how reality and a very accurate model to reality operate, it's dispassioned, doesn't care about your feelings, will hurt you if you disobey them or try to. But if you follow them, it can work for you. And there's nothing evil intent behind it. It's just, here's the rules and these are what it is. And that's all there is to it. Have fun. Like, there are ways to dictate certain standards that people must follow if you had all powerful capabilities of doing so, where you don't have to be evil at the same time too. I'm just saying it's not an impossible combination between the two. It's not like mint and chocolate. Like, you can combine the two and actually have something very appetizing. John Richards, what do you think?
Well, if you look at their modus operandi, how do you get to be a dictator? Well, you certainly don't apply for the job, and you certainly don't go to an interview and present your qualifications and your CV, do you? Mm. You climb the greasy pole by fair means or foul. And once you're there, you don't brook any criticism or, you know, disagreement at all. You just dominate. And
exterminate? And exterminate.
Yes. That too, yes.
George, it looked like you had some comments. Go for it. Oh, you're on mute, my friend. What Go on ahead. You're on mute.
We're treading on the heels of Doctor Who again. It's been a while. I forgot what I was going to say.
It's okay.
Put me back on the shelf and I'll figure out what I was going to say.
He's going to figure it out. But Larry, what do you think if someone said that you could have a completely neutral dictatorship where it's just, these are the laws, these are the ones you have to follow, that's it. Similar to like how the laws of nature operate.
Well, I guess you could do that. excuse me. I was a political science major and we came up in that with in one of our classes, which is the best form of government. And as John Richard pointed out, it's a benevolent dictator. The thing about it is they never last. I mean, even if you have one, if you got one, you know, he's going to eventually die and someone's going to replace him. How do you find another benevolent dictator? Okay. And I would think it would be possible, like you were asking, to just set out a set of laws and say, once you guys follow these laws, don't break them. Everything else is up to you. I think God tried it with 10 Commandments, but I don't think that works either because, you know, the first thing he said was, y'all shall have no gods other than me.
Right.
And then here we have a society with freedom of religion. How does that work? You know?
Right. Right. It's the same thing as that. The I didn't know there were other options. Right. It's just like, you won't have any other gods. Like, wait, there are other gods.
Yeah.
Everyone's thinking, right. Like, I thought you were the only speaking fire bush.
It depends on how broad the laws that you lay down are or how well defined.
So failing a benign or benevolent dictator, how about we all take it in turns, you know, like jury duty, so that this week I'm the dictator and next week is you, Larry, and the week after is you, Ty, and then it's George's turn. And we could do that with God as well, couldn't we? I'm going to be God.
So okay. it is funny that you bring that up. That is a movie that was very popular. It's a horror movie, unfortunately. So I some spoiler alerts there. But yeah, when you swap like that, one of the rules that one of the people made was, I want to be an anonymous dictator. And that was the rules that had to be followed. And then when he lost his position, nobody knew who the next dictator was, but there was a dictator. And then that slowly spiraled. So like, it's the point of governance is not to give people in charge. It's sort of more of like to promote a standard of living that's at highest quality possible, not for those who are in power, but for those that, you know, are to be governed, right? And I feel like most systems eventually corrupt themselves towards the benefit of those who are in charge, which in my head is a human nature problem and not so much a governing problem, because it is human tendency to think selfishly. It's unfortunate. It's a fortunate aspect. Yeah. And so maybe if we were as human beings programmed better, we can handle this social concept a lot better, because we still are very much operating on this very primitive operating software that makes us think about us first, everybody else afterwards. But bees, ants, think of a lot of herd based animal in nature. They know the systems and they follow it well, and it's very unlikely that they're like, hey, let's fly over to that tree and kill all their things. It's like, no, we got honey here, it's all good.
We can always join the Borg.
We're back to Doctor Who again.
Star Trek.
George, go on ahead.
Well, I was just thinking about what to me is an important difference between the dictatorship of Russia, let's say, and the dictatorship of China. Because as I sense it from what I read, they're very, very different. They're both oppressive, Russia is governing by kleptocrats. They have stolen the resources of the communist state and privatized a lot of it, kind of like the mafia, you know. And if you disagree with us and you get out of the country, we will find you. We will poison you. We will put radioactivity into your body, you know. If you say nasty things about us and you're a newspaper reporter, we'll put a bullet in your head. I mean, this is mafia type stuff.
Yeah.
The Chinese are doing it very, very differently. I think in their situation, and this is my own perception of it, is that it's a government by a group, a governing body that's sort of appointing the front men and saying, okay, you're president for life. But we are calling the shots. And we have made our 5-year plan, and we're going to pollute like hell for the next 5 years. We're going to put all this garbage into the atmosphere because our goal is to turn, to flip that around. We're going to become environmental right after that. And part of the proof of this is that while we weren't looking, China has become the world leader in high-speed rail. That's the most efficient form of transportation you've got. And so we weren't looking, but they're planning for the future. And they're killing, what do you call it? They're jailing Uyghurs like crazy. You know, they've steamrolled over Tibet. I mean, so it's a monster. But somehow they've got a goal at the end of the road. We're not going to see how it's going to turn out. And, you know, I don't know if any of us are going to be alive.
Sure, I definitely see that the governing body of China is more of like a government in the interest of the government, and the government doesn't represent the people whatsoever. Whereas in Russia, you can clearly see sort of a more single-minded. It's a much smaller team with one clear figurehead who is, for the most part, calling shots, and whatever he doesn't like doesn't go, very much like in a mafia format. Like the power pyramid very, very quickly funnels out to just a couple of people at the very top. And it's, again, different systems of managing people. But in my head, among China, Russia, and U.S., while they all have faults, I find the U.S. system is the best one for, or the least worst one, particularly when it comes to the interests of social welfare, and or at least the interests of those who are in a disagreement and allowing for free conversations about that. Because if I was in China, if I was in Russia right now, I'd be deathly terrified if I was even having this conversation with you three fine young gentlemen with no white nose hairs.
Right. So that's something that's
there is, speaking of movies that we're talking about and shows, there is a one called Planetary Zoo, which is the concept is America. It's like a Twilight Zone where America or the whole planet Earth exists far, far away from all the other civilized planets, and is simply under observation as an example for what happens when you give, you know, intelligent minds nuclear powers and no useful forms of governance. And so, like, the struggles that we're having here could be indicative.
Yeah, we're about 25,000 miles from the, or 25,000. Light years that from the center of the universe, center of the galaxy, and the galaxy, I would think, with all those stars close together, you know, and all the planets that are around those stars, might be the downtown, as it were, of the galaxy. And here we are out on this isolated spiral arm doing our thing. It may be that, you know, we just can't communicate with them because it takes 25,000 years for light to get there.
Right.
It'd be a bit of a disjointed conversation, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah.
I also just worry about, in the event that if we ever do meet anybody, or I hope it's a meeting where we get to see them first, like we travel to them, because anybody who comes here is going to be like so technologically advanced that they're going to look around and be like, oh, resources, easy, let's get it. Let's just push the button, because we're still far away from getting our stuff together. George, what do you think?
Well, I've just noticed that us atheists seem to have a fondness for science fiction. Do the religious people also?
Yeah, of course, because they love fiction and
turn like like the Left Behind series, right?
They pull science into fiction. It's an unfortunate situation, actually. But
in fact, I could bring something to this because Frank Turek, who you may or may not have heard of, he's an apologist of some note, has just brought out a book which compares Jesus and his life story with the superheroes from Marvel Comics, about which lots of movies have been made. So he's pointing out how, you know, people who rescue the world got their idea in his mind from the story of Jesus. Now, I would say that aligning your God with known fiction is not much of a good connection, especially as if you go back in time, you'll find that the story of Jesus owes a lot to previous fictitious leaders.
Mm.
Yeah.
Mm. Mm-hmm. Very true.
But I wanted to say a bit about the two autocracies of China and Russia, because they are very different. And although they both started out as communists, and I think that a communist state asserts compliance on its population. But in the case of Russia, they've had some disasters. And so the communist state has lost credibility. They had a horrendous invasion from the Nazis in World War II. They've had several disasters since the fall of the Berlin Wall produced an economic disaster. So in that part of the world, the old autocracy has lost its gloss to an extent. Whereas in China, they haven't had these terrible disasters. And since they've sort of surreptitiously got rid of communism and turned into capitalists, they've managed to make everybody else's life better. So, you know, if people are doing well and can see a future in which they get even richer, they're not going to be disagreeable, are they? They're not going to revolt.
I'll throw something else out too. Oh, just on top of what you were saying, John, yeah. There was a period of time where Russia did not nearly have as much wealth as it did, and they value, or as they do now, and they attribute a lot of that to Vladimir Putin's, whatever you want to call it, his stay in office. And so there was a dramatic improvement in the standard of living, in the wealth of the country while he was there. And because he was trending so high and people associated the improvement of their lives to this guy, they're very much willing to turn a blind eye or at least copacetic to the more inhumane things that he's been doing, including invasion of Russia, Crimea, stuff like that.
Well, except that he doesn't let them know. They're kept in ignorance of what he's getting up to.
Go ahead, Larry.
Very much in control of the propaganda, the media.
Yeah, I'd like to do a callback to what you said about having the other aliens visit us first versus visit them.
Sure.
Well, are you familiar with the Voyager
program? Star Trek?
No. This is one that we sent into space. We sent a thing. Yeah, a Voyager space vehicle, and it was unmanned, of course, and it's heading out of the solar system now. It's in an interstellar space now, and it has on it a golden record, you know, about the golden record. It has our pictures of humanity and music and speeches. And it also has, unfortunately, directions to find us.
Yes.
And the disc itself is made out of gold. Mm. So the aliens that find it, you were talking about resources and stuff. Here's all they really need to come and gather the gold that they know now that we have. So it's something to ponder when you're lying awake in the middle of the night.
Yes. Come and get it.
Yeah.
So many comments right now, though we are on the radio, right?
Yeah. And the images of the humans are naked, so we don't even wear clothes that they put on there. I mean, the etchings of humans.
Mm. I think one of the things that we're realizing, at least through this conversation, let me know if I'm on the right page, is that benevolent dictatorships, while not rare, are certainly not everlasting.
Right.
And while they could exist, it's the people that they're governing or the environment that they're governing in that makes it hostile for that kind of form of leadership. Mm-hmm. And what tends to be more lasting are the more hostile dictatorships, because they can be more resistant to change. They can be more, you know, resilient to challenges, even if they have to stamp them out in very hostile fashions. And unfortunately, that tends to, in the short term, provide a lot of benefits for those who are in that system. But for everybody else, and especially for those countries in the long term, tend to lead to fallout where most of the people suffer. And so while we are still on the look for a better system for governing people, I think we can confidently say that there's much room for improvement here, and it's not even the best standard that we can observe right now. And so, you know, education, as John called for, is a good way of moving forward towards a more perfect union, a more perfect system, better society. I like critical thinking, and I think it falls right into that as well. But I also feel like media plays into it as well, because propaganda, marketing, advertisements, they're all excuses for us not to think. They're systems that are being given to us without any challenges, and we tend to just absorb them and put them into our thought space. We can fight to get those out, or we can also talk to, how do I put it? We can talk to, how do I put it? I don't want to stop marketing and propaganda. I want to just have intellectualism held to a higher standard, where people can parse entertainment from facts, or like news from, this is entertainment news, this is journalism, this is editorials. I want those to be separated better. George, what do you think? George.
Who? Oh, me.
George.
Yes. You know, having worked in broadcasting, one of the things that has troubled me greatly, and having read newscasts to 20,000 people myself, is how news has become entertainment. Okay. So if you turn on news on any commercial network now, the reporting is accompanied by music, drums.
Yes.
You know? I mean, wow.
Why do they
it's
need
background
that?
Music?
Yeah. Why do they need pumping going on while they're delivering a speech? It's ridiculous. Yes.
Well, there's a reason.
Put a laugh
for that,
track in there afterwards. That'd be weird.
There's a reason for that, because you're getting revved up.
Yeah. Yes.
You're getting outraged by the story. You're getting outraged by the music. You know.
Yeah, that's right. It's 100 BPM, isn't it, to make your heart go faster? But
not just that, but it's also the color coding too when they do videos. But yeah.
I
didn't think of that. Yeah.
We've moved some way towards this separation of entertainment from information in the form of the BBC, which doesn't carry adverts. And it's very noticeable when you're not able to receive the BBC and you get some, I don't know, Sky product or other, and you see the opening shots of a movie, a TV drama. And then after a few minutes of that, when maybe the murder happens, you get a little burst of adverts, and then you go back to the story, and it's imperceptible, really. And then so on and so forth. Every 10 minutes, you'll get another dose of adverts that segue smoothly between the drama and the selling. And so in an hour of UK television, you have 100% drama from the BBC, or I don't know whether it's 50 minutes out of the 60 from the ITV companies, which are commercial. But in the US, you get 40 minutes of drama, and the rest is these adverts that fill up to the hour. So
it's less than 40 minutes.
It's 38.
Something like that. Yeah,
it's really unfortunate. Yeah. I can also throw this out too. I wish we moved away from hiring the most attractive, well-spoken people to read scripts and calling that news in like high fidelity video where it's just nicely bokeh behind them and they have the best, you know, suits and makeup on, because people know that a pretty face is more willing to accept whatever they say compared to whoever wrote the script. And then I also want to know, I already know who wrote the scripts, a lot of them in America, but like, it'd be nice if there wasn't a script that was like being teleprompted out to a very pretty face to say into a camera. I wish that wasn't the way how news was delivered. I wish news had more of like a honest, hey, I'm the person that wrote this. This is my thoughts on it. And I'm letting you know if this is an editorial or a communication piece or just the facts. And one of the things that we have here in the US is called NPR. I don't know if, John, do you know about NPR? Maybe you do. National Public Radio. They have a couple of rules. One, they report on things 24 hours after the fact. So it's not just like a, hey, 12 people died in a bomb explosion. I'm sorry, 50 people. I'm sorry, no, 3 people died. 7 people died. It's like, it's very, hey, this is the news from yesterday, today.
No breaking news.
and it's the most passive tone possible. And a lot of the people who do their reports are the people who are there at the spot, flown out, write up a summary, and they give their own speech to it. The NPR, I think, is like one of the highest standards that we have. But anyway,
yeah, I agree.
Yeah. Larry, what do you think?
Oh, I agree. Oh, yeah, I was just going to say that.
I wanted to mention that one of the criteria that dictators seem to share all across the board, whether they're gods or earthly dictators, is that they assemble a team of yes men.
Yes.
They demand loyalty, and they have these henchmen who will do their bidding unquestioned.
Yeah.
And that's how, and if you notice that the churches are very like that.
Right. Yes, absolutely. You know, the scariest thing is no one cares if you're a dictator, really, honestly, because anyone can be a dictator. Anyone can go outside and just make rules. It's the first followers that are the problems, because that's the people who both give, that's the people who the dictator is only open to. It's the ones who give them the immediate sense of power. And it's the ones that start the momentum for other people to start following this person who's being followed by a crowd.
Yeah.
And yes, there are a lot of maniacs out there, but it's the ones who follow them first, the ones you got to watch out for. George, what do you think? Yeah.
Well, this is an interesting phenomenon, and I've been really concerned about this for a long time. It's like if Donald Trump did not have his followers, he'd just be another madman yelling at the mirror in the barroom.
Right.
It's the followers, and one of the things I noticed thinking back on my own childhood is that the schoolyard bully attracts sycophants.
Right.
He has the courtiers who assemble around him. This is an interesting phenomenon. I am not worried about the bully. I am worried about those other guys.
It's the ones who enable the bully, right?
Yes, exactly. Right.
And I feel like those people do it either out of a sense of opportunism, like, hey, I can get something out of this, or a complete lack of self-esteem, right? And the bully's irreversibly targeting that person. What do you think?
Or fear. Because this is what Trump is doing now. All these Republican politicians who are enabling him are afraid of his vengeance.
Yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm. Both afraid and see short-term opportunistic, you know, benefits for following, which is just really bizarre. We should have a system that avoids stuff like that, because again, as John's alluding to, I am worried next election, because it seems like now we're at the precipice of every 4 years knocking on the door to autocracy that might be irreversible. Again, democracy is fragile and it changes. Though on a good note, that's not an excuse to not get educated, not an excuse to find new things to learn. Learn how your government works, participate in your government, because it's only by staying in the back lines and staying uninvolved that things like this can fall completely out of our control. And now that we know what the danger is, we're better suited to stop it from happening. And we can support, and not a call to action, but we can support better community vigilance and worldwide awareness of bad forms of government, which we can see in the news, both here at home as well as overseas. And we should be aware of each case. Larry,
when people start grumbling about the government, the first question they should have levied towards them is, did you vote?
Okay.
Because they shouldn't have a right to complain if they didn't vote.
They need to vote, for sure. We need to close down. We're getting top of the hour here. We're running out of time. We want to take final questions, comments?
No. Thank you so much. We'll come back. You guys know how to find all of us. Check out Digital Free Thought Hour. Check out the links in the descriptions.
You can we're available on podcasts everywhere.
I think Larry had a book, blah, blah, blah.
Atheism, What's It All About? Thank you for joining us on the Digital Free Thought Radio Hour. Remember, you can find us on iTunes, Pocket Cast, Amazon, and podcasts everywhere. If you're watching this on YouTube, be sure to like and subscribe. Remember, everyone is going to somebody else's hell. The time to worry about it is when they prove that heavens and hells and souls are real. Until then, don't sweat it. Enjoy your life, and we'll see you next week. Say bye, everybody.
Bye-bye.
Bye, everybody.